If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key and that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
This week's episode of A Cast of Kings is brought to you by hover.com/kingsroad. That's hover.com/kingsroad. If you have a great idea, you want to secure a great domain for it, you want to find a perfect name that represents your project, Hover makes it easy to find that domain name so you can get started actually working on that great idea immediately. So, Jonah Robinson, we used Kingsroad as the promo code this week. This is the road that they travel on, presumably to get back to King's Landing, yes?
That is correct.
And actually, I believe it's the focus of a lot of the activity in this week's episode.
Yes, a decent amount.
Is the King's Road in the books, is it kind of a big to-do? Is it a big deal? Is it a consequential road, or is it just kind of, hey, this is where this episode was set this time?
Yeah, I think it's sort of like the Appian Way of Westeros. Sure.
What is Appian Way?
It's in Rome. It's a big, important road, I believe.
All right.
Don't fact check that.
Yeah, I don't know if that's right. I went to grad school, and my school was located on Appian Way. So there you go. That's also another Appian Way.
The Appian Way was one of the earliest and strategically most important Roman roads of the ancient Republic.
Nice.
It connected Rome to Brindisi.
Look at you. Well, hover.com/kingsroad. is the way you're going to get 10% off your first purchase. Welcome to A Cast of Kings, an unofficial podcast about the HBO original series Game of Thrones. I'm David Chen.
I'm Joanna Robinson.
And together we're reading A Game of Thrones from George R.R. Martin's A Song of Ice and Fire. If you're wanting to find more episodes of this podcast, go to gameofthronespodcast.com. You can also email us at acastofkings@gmail.com. That's acastofkings@gmail.com. You can also comment on this episode at facebook.com/acastofkings, where we'll post every episode in our season one rewatch. So for those tuning in for the first time, typically what we do on this podcast is we will watch the most recent episode of Game of Thrones, and then Joanna will comment on it from a book reading perspective. I'll comment on it from a non-book reading perspective. But we're doing a season one rewatch, which means we're both rewatching episodes of season one, and we're both reading along with the show. So this week, we will be covering everything through season one, episode two, King's Road. And I should point out, we'll be spoiling everything through, you know, everything that's been on Game of Thrones, the HBO original series. So everything that's been on TV is fair game for this podcast. We'll refer to future events that way. And I think that's all the preamble we need, Joanna, for this episode. So let's dive right in.
Let's get right to it.
So last episode ended with Bran getting pushed off of a roof, and we didn't know what was going to happen to him. Where does this episode begin?
This episode begins with Daenerys. You get no satisfaction right away with Bran. We begin across.
You make it seem like you want him to die, Joanna. You get no satisfaction from.
We get no confirmation that kid is dead.
Yes.
We go across the Narrow Sea to Essos. We start with Dany, Daenerys, and Ser Jorah. This is Ser Jorah's first substantial scene. He and Dany eat some horse jerky, and he talks about how the Dothraki survive on grass and horse, and you can't just eat grass and hands or some jerky, so you know it's horse jerky. And you know, basically he gives some exposition on the Dothraki region, and then he goes on to have a conversation with her asshole brother Viserys about wouldn't Viserys be more comfortable back with Illyrio. And then Viserys sort of makes some barbed remarks about how Jorah found himself in this position selling slaves.
Right.
And so how you get some
exposition about how Jorah found himself in his situation.
Yeah, right. Yep.
And he says something like, you know, when I'm ruling, you won't be punished for such nonsense.
Yeah, exactly.
So, you know, kind of just a table setting scene. Nothing. Is there anything really about this that you wanted to point out? Or?
No, I don't think so.
Yeah,
no.
Just kind of. Keep me up to date. Now, I don't remember. Is this the scene where we see Danny get off the horse and walk?
Yeah.
Or was that later on in the show?
I think that's this scene. Does she look all like bow-legged and uncomfortable? I forgot that she looked all bow-legged. Yeah.
Yeah. That's their way of conveying that she's having a difficult time with things.
In the book they get quite detailed talking about like the blisters and the chafing and everything that's going on with her. So,
yeah.
Yep.
Well, we've all been there. So, anyway, Winterfell.
You know, when you marry a horse lord and then you spend your honeymoon riding a horse for like a month or whatever.
Yeah, it can impact
it
your...
It can chafe.
It can chafe. That's right, it chafes. So, Winterfell. We flash there in this awesome scene where Tyrion slaps Joffrey repeatedly, and the Hound's like, he's going to remember that, and he's like, I hope he does.
Better looking bitches than you're used to, Uncle. My mother's been looking for you. You arrived for King's Landing today.
Before you go, you will call on Lord and Lady Stark and offer your sympathies.
What good will my sympathies do then?
None, but it is expected of you. Your absence has already been noted.
The boy means nothing to me. God, I can't stand the wailing of women.
One word, and I hit you again.
I'm telling Mother!
Go. Tell her. But first you will get to Lord and Lady Stark, and you will fall on your knees in front of them and tell them how very sorry you are, that you are at their service and that all your prayers are with them. Do you understand?
You can't.
Do you understand?
The prince will remember that, little lord.
I hope so. If he forgets, be a good dog and remind him.
This is so great because you were talking last episode about how in the pilot episode we don't really see Joffrey be an asshole, but they establish it so quickly in this scene.
This whole episode, actually, I would say.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, the whole episode, but I mean, just right away, Jack Gleeson is just like leaning douchily on his sword and talking about how he can't stand the wailing of women. And the scene is so efficient because you hate Joffrey right away because he's an asshole about, you know, poor Bran. And you love Tyrion for slapping him twice. So, you know, it gets you right where you need to be with those characters
totally,
right away.
Totally. Yeah. So then they have breakfast and Tyrion reveals that Bran has survived. And let's just say that Cersei and Jaime are not terribly good at hiding their concern over this fact. They're not too subtle about the fact that they're not happy that Bran is still alive.
It's funny. I think their glances are actually kind of subtle, but Tyrion picks right up on it. Like,
well, and Cersei's like, oh man, they shouldn't let him suffer. Like, they should just put him out of his misery. And who would say something like that?
That's true. She's like, oh, but why not kill him?
Yeah,
but
why maybe, not kill him?
But maybe kill him?
That's not suspicious at all.
The funny thing for those of us, you know, who've seen up through season 5 watching this episode, this is a scene where we get to see the Tommen and the Myrcella that they eventually recast. You know, so it's just two other rando kids in that scene. But it's also good character work for Tyrion because he doesn't get along with Cersei, but he gets along with the kids so well. Like, he's such a good uncle, you can tell. So, just making friends everywhere, our Tyrion Lannister.
There's also this moment when Jaime says, sometimes I wonder whose side you're on, brother. And you kind of wonder how much Tyrion knows about things and how much he has sort of intimated that he knows about things. You know, because the assumption there is, hey, you know that we tried to kill Bran. Let's just get it out there, Tyrion. You know we tried to kill Bran. Let's be adults about it.
We're boning on the regular. It's a thing we do.
Yeah.
Yeah, and Tyrion says, "Don't be, you know, you offend me. You know how much I love my family, or whatever."
Right.
Also, they mention the White Walkers in the scene. They must have mentioned it in the first episode, but they mentioned this scene, and it's pretty great. It's pretty great to see how early they're seeding all this stuff in. So, I mean, totally. The cold open, obviously, but yeah.
Anyway. Totally. So then we have a scene with Cersei and Catelyn in Bran's room, right?
Yeah.
And this is a scene that theoretically was retconned later on. Do you recall the story behind this, right? Where Cersei explains a story about how she lost a son. Right?
Yeah.
And I think in season 5, I believe, right? The season we just finished, there is a flashback where a witch predicts the children Cersei will have.
Right.
And the son that Cersei refers to is not accounted for in that list.
Right.
Right. So
that's because this scene is not in the book.
Right.
This scene where she talks about like her beautiful black haired boy, which, you know, you can tell by the hair color that he's Robert's son and how she lost him. And Lena Headey gives like a really good emotional performance in this scene. And you actually kind of feel for Cersei. And it was actually kind of controversial, I think, because some people think that the show has made Cersei too sympathetic, that she should be more of a bitch than she is. And I don't know. I think she's plenty.
Oh, I mean, I think this episode removes all doubt about that.
But I mean, that scene, I feel like you're supposed to believe that as much as Cersei wants Bran to die, she also is telling a true story about her life that she does have emotion around. Do you know?
Right. The question is, is it just a straight-up retcon where the show ignored that this scene ever happened, or is the show intending us to believe that she lied during the scene? My guess is it's the first, that they didn't know how the show would – they didn't even know they'd get to season 5, you know, at this point. And so they're kind of like, hey, let's give this character some backstory that's interesting and powerful and then deal with the consequences later, that those consequences being – that
we'll just ignore it.
Just completely ignore it.
Yeah.
We have to ignore it to make this prophecy work.
Yeah. I feel like, and I really loved Michelle Fairley's performance in that scene too, because she's just sort of like, what the fuck is this? Like, I don't know you. Why are you telling me this story? I don't know. It was a great performance from both the women. And FYI, I mean, we should probably talk about the Emmys a little bit. This is weird timing because this podcast will come out several weeks after
recording this right after the Emmys happened, but it's going to be several weeks until you actually are listening to this.
But we should mention that, you know, Game of Thrones had a huge historic Emmy win, beat the West Wing's record for most Emmys in a single year. But I was really rooting for Lena Headey to win this year, actually. And I was surprised that Peter Dinklage won. I was rooting for her to win. So
Peter Dinklage seemed to be surprised that he won.
He was quite surprised, yes.
You know, this is not the best season of Game of Thrones, I think. That's the thing, is that...
Oh, yeah, it's not, and it's certainly Tyrion's weakest season.
Right. So I think it's
marginal in this season.
This is more like one of those cumulative Emmys, you know, where...
Return of the King.
Right, Return of the King, exactly right. Yeah. So where that movie swept the Oscars that year, kind of as a recognition of the monumental achievement that the entire series was.
Yes. So. It was an Oscar for the trilogy.
Yeah.
We won't dwell too long on this, but I think there also is this situation where the Emmy voting changed this year, where more basically anyone who is part of the Television Academy can vote, whereas before it was a selective panel that voted.
Right.
And so I think because they widened the voting and just went on the honor system that everyone was watching on the episodes, I honestly, cynically think that a lot of people didn't watch all the episodes they were supposed to and were just like, oh, Game of Thrones is popular. Let's throw it 8 technical awards.
Yeah.
Why not?
Yeah, the rules did make it more easy for people to vote if they hadn't seen the show, basically. Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Emmy talk, the end.
Yeah. Anyway, so what else is going on at Winterfell? Jon forges a sword for Arya.
The Castellan forges it. But yeah. He gets a sword for Arya.
Apologies. He acquires it for her.
Yeah, he doesn't actually forge it, but whatever. That was the weirdest nitpick. I'm so sorry. Anyway, and then he runs into Jaime in the courtyard. And I know you mentioned this last week, I think, because yes. You were talking about how this maybe stands in for some of the sparring between Joffrey and Rob.
It's basically kind of seeds, because I don't think this scene is in the book, right?
No,
it's basically just a way to show you how much tension there is between the Lannisters and the Starks.
And also there's a lot of wall backstory. I feel like they had to work really hard to get you to understand that, like, if you go to the wall, you're celibate. If you go to the wall, you're there forever. If you go to the wall, I feel like they keep going over the rules of what it means to be in the Night's Watch. But there were two things that I noticed. One was that Jaime grabs Jon's hand, like he shakes his hand, and then he like holds it aggressively, like in an alpha dog sort of. Move. And I was like, oh, Jaime, don't go too attached to your hand. Won't have it later. And then he won't be able to pull that move later. And then the other one was, he says, give my regards, I think, to, I don't know, the wall or the White Walkers or something like that.
Right. But, which then Roose Bolton repeats.
Well, yeah. Well, the whole Jaime Lannister sends his regards is a famous part of the whole story. So. This early give my regards line was pretty cute.
Good call out, Shiona Robinson. So then Arya and Jon have this awesome scene, probably one of my favorite scenes on this episode.
I had the blacksmith make it for you special. It won't hack a man's head off, but it can poke him full of holes if you're quick enough.
I can be quick.
You'll have to work at it every day. How's it feel? Do you like the balance?
I think so.
First lesson. Sticking with the pointy end.
I know which end to use.
I'm going to miss you. Careful. All the best swords have names, you know.
Sansa can keep her sewing needles. I've got a needle of my own.
You really get a sense of the relationship between the two of them. You kind of understand that they're obviously kind of the black sheep of the family, both of them.
Yes.
For various reasons. And, they embrace for the last time. This is what watching this show does, right? When we're rewatching season one, now that we know everything that's happened in the later seasons. Firstly, you get a sense of how consequential the Stark family is. I mean, just the Stark family is the most consequential family in Westeros, I would argue. Just all these kids being sent off to these various places that then are serve critical roles in the development of what happens in those places. Right?
Yeah.
But also the poignancy of what's going on here, that this is the last, like when I was watching this for the first time, I didn't know that that would be the last time they'd ever see each other.
Yeah.
Ditto the scene with Ned and John later on at the King's Road.
Ned and John, Rob and John. There's like all these goodbyes that you're just like, oh man, make it count, guys. This is it.
It's more emotional now watching it than it was watching it the first time around.
Oh, right? Certainly. Yeah. I mean, especially Rob and John and Ned and John, because you know for certain they're not getting back together. I have no information about this, but like it's possible Arya and John could be reunited. And there, I don't have any information on that.
Right.
And there was a nice line where he said, I think sometimes different roads lead to the same castle, I think he said. Or maybe that's in the book. I don't remember.
This is presuming that John is not dead permanently.
Great. John is so not dead. Come on. You know I believe he's not dead. John is alive. Come on. That's so funny. I didn't even remember that, like, there was any doubt whatsoever.
There was any doubt that he's dead, that he's alive, I should say.
Anyway, he says sometimes different roads lead to the same castle, which is a nice line. And knowing what we know, like, watching the scene, watching her, like, hop up into his arms like she does, which is just so cute and childish, thinking about when they might maybe see each other again. And how much shit she's gone through in the meantime. You know, how he'll meet her after she's killed a bunch of people if he meets her again. Yeah, it's a great scene in the book too. Really, really sweet. And I think in the book they hammer home a little harder that Jon and Arya are the only ones who look like Starks, that all the other kids kind of look like Catelyn, and they're the only two that have, you know, the Starkish look to them. Mm-hmm. Which is another thing that sort of like black sheep.
Right.
Bond.
Yep. So very emotional moment. Jon says goodbye to Bran for the last time as well. Yeah, maybe Jon can meet Bran as well, Jonah. Did you ever think of that?
I did think of that, yeah.
You didn't acknowledge it as a possibility.
I mean, that's because I forgot about Bran, because who cares? But
the thing that's notable about this scene is how Catelyn kind of treats him, right? She's super cold.
Yeah.
The only question I had is, you know, I don't know. The thing that quote unquote bothers me about this is just that, because it doesn't really bother me. That's why I said quote unquote is that would someone, you know, I guess in the context of the show, John is what, 20 years old, 25 years old?
No, I think he's supposed to be like 18.
Really? So Kit Harington is supposed to be 18 in the show?
I think so, yeah.
Okay, well, would Catelyn really hold on to that kind of bitterness and resentment for that long is the question, right? Because this is the first time we're seeing them interact, and so the show needs to convey to you the tension between them. But in reality, would she really be that cold after decades of time with this
person? Well, I mean, in the book, I think she says it should have been you or something really like nastier.
Way colder.
But, you know, I think in the book they explain that the reason why Catelyn, like, has held on to her John issues for so long is because Ned won't tell her who the mother is and won't tell her anything about it. So she's convinced that he loves this woman and never loved her, just loves this, like, his mother, because he won't talk about it. And I think Catelyn would, you know, if she knew that it was just like some tavern wench that he knocked up or whatever, she wouldn't care. But she feels threatened because of that. And also, I think in this sort of feudal inheriting society, women, you know, we like to think of Catelyn as something of a hero, but, you know, mothers were often very prickly about bastards because it threatened their own children in terms of inheritance.
Right.
So all that's to say, it does seem like an odd character beat for Catelyn, because in general, I think we're supposed to like her.
Yeah.
And this makes her character a little complicated.
I'm glad they left that "it should have been you" line out of the book, out of the show, I should say, from the book. You know what it reminded me of? You ever see that movie Walk Hard?
Yeah.
There's this line in, it's a parody of, Walk Hard is a brilliant, hilarious film, and it's a parody of music biopics. And essentially what happens is Dewey Cox, when he's a little kid, he and his brother are playing with machetes, and he accidentally kills his brother with a machete. And his dad, in a running joke throughout the whole movie, keeps saying, "The wrong kid died." And then, at various points, not totally non sequitur, just says, "Wrong kid died." And that's exactly what that felt like to me. Just saying, in a comically out of place way, "The wrong kid died." So I'm glad they left that. I'm glad they had some restraint.
Yes.
In the show. So.
So then Ned and Catelyn say goodbye. But only temporarily, because, you know, she ends up going to King's Landing right after him. And John and Rob say goodbye, and John says, "You Starks are hard to kill," which is, you know nothing, Jon Snow. That's like that's the wrongest thing you've ever said. So there you go. The Starks prove pretty easy to kill.
That's the opposite of foreshadowing. So then John and Ned go on the King's Road, and this is actually one of my favorite musical cues from this season. And I'll put it at the, like, if you've listened to this episode, you'll hear this music, because I put it at the beginning. But they have this emotional scene where he asks about his mother and whether she knows what he's doing, and da-da-da. And he says, "Next time we meet, I'll tell you about her." And in some of the most infamous lines in the whole series, says, "Next time we meet, I'll tell you about it." Of course, they're never going to meet again. Unless Ned's also not dead, Joanna. That's also possible in your crazy universe, right?
Or unless John is dead and next season takes place in heaven.
In the afterlife. So very tantalizing. And my understanding is there's a lot of speculation about who John's mother is. I don't have
Aren't you
any
curious?
Idea. No, I'm not.
Okay.
To be honest with you. But I know there's a lot of speculation and there's a lot of fan theories out there.
Sure.
We'll see what happens. That may or may not be revealed. But yeah, kind of an emotional scene when it's like literally a fork in the road and they both go off in completely opposite directions.
Yeah.
So,
never to meet again.
Never to meet again. Very sad. Very sad. But love that musical cue. It's just so emotional and powerful, and it's a perfect cue for a goodbye. So anyway,
there was a meme that went around in season one that was for book readers mostly, I think, that it had all the Stark kids and Ned and Catelyn, and then it had the Taylor Swift lyric, "We are never, ever, ever getting back together," on it. And due to your uproarious laughter, I can tell that you think it's funny too.
It's amazing. I'm laughing on the inside.
Okay, good.
So, anyway. So on the King's Road, Ned and Robert talk about what happened and a lot of exposition here, right?
Yeah.
A lot of stuff about, oh, hey, you find out the woman's name was Wyla. You get a good sense of their relationship, right? So is there anything about this scene that you feel is worth mentioning?
Robert has this like bloodthirst for the Targaryens because the Targaryens took Lyanna Stark, and they hammer this home more in the book, but he's just crazy when it comes to Targaryens, right? And so when he gets a message from Jorah that Dany has married, like from Varys via Jorah that Dany has married Khal Drogo, he's talking about how they should send an assassin for her. And Ned's like, bro, she's a teenager. She's not a threat to you. The Dothraki don't even like the ocean. They don't have any ships. Calm down. Leave her alone. And you see, I think this throughout the season proves to be a non-starter conversation between the two of them.
Right.
They're close friends, but this is something that they just can't see eye to eye on. So.
So then we cut to the Dothraki with Dany. What's going on in this scene, Joanna?
Oh, Khal Drogo is taking her roughly from behind.
Uh-huh.
In the manner of the Dothraki. He mounts her as if she were a horse. And then we see Dany, like, she looks kind of upset and teary-eyed, and then she, like, looks at her dragon eggs and draws some sort of comfort.
And she's like, power. Soon.
Yeah. She's like, soon, motherfuckers. The yeah. dragon's coming. Yeah. End scene. That's it.
End scene. Then we get a lovely scene between Tyrion and Jon.
Yeah.
Which I think is this scene doesn't happen at its place in the books. There's a very similar scene in the books, but it doesn't happen on the road. I think it happens at the wall, if I'm not mistaken, right?
No, I think it's on the road. But...
Okay, well, then I've added no value with my book reading. So they have this conversation where they're talking about, you know, what it means to be on the wall and... talking about like, oh, hey, these are rapists and thieves and so on and
yeah.
so forth, right? And this is the first time that John is introduced to the or sees it kind of close up,
warts right? and all, yeah, yeah. Burst his bubble, his sort of, you know, you talked last episode about Sansa and her idealizing Joffrey and that whole thing, and I think it's a similar thing for John. He idealized the Watch as a noble enterprise that was open to him as a bastard who had no other real options, you know? And then, yeah, to see that he's lumped in with a bunch of rapists and murderers is disheartening. So,
to say the least.
Tyrion has a great line where he says, you know, a mind needs a book like a sword needs a whetstone, or need to keep it sharp, basically. I mangled it, but it's a great line. I'm no Tyrion. And he calls Joffrey his repulsive nephew, which is fantastic. And then he makes a sort of snarky remark about Grumpkins and Snarks, which are like fictional creatures that you know, people people who don't believe that the White Walkers exist, don't believe that the supernatural stuff north of the Wall exists, lump them in with these fairy tale creatures called Grumpkins and Snarks. And all I could think of watching this scene was, if Tyrion ever makes it to the Wall, like, I can't wait if Tyrion ever meets a White Walker, you know, then I'll have to be like, damn, I zombies do exist.
Because throughout this whole episode, he's kind of doubting that they exist. Yeah. He kind of dismisses it as folk.
Well, everyone does. Like, Jaime says a similar thing. Like, you know, all the Lannisters, basically, it's been so long since the supernatural elements sort of made a force, you know, that they've faded into fairy tale and myth. But something I did want to talk about that the book hammers home that the show never does, I think, is Tyrion's obsession with dragons.
Right.
And knowing that, you know, reading those chapters as you and I did these last couple weeks, it really makes that scene in season 5 where he sees a dragon,
yes,
like, so much more meaningful.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
It's interesting, right, how some things we learn, you know, now, or reading the book now, make season 5 more interesting.
Yeah.
And then some things we already know from season 5 make, you know, a lot of events in the first season more resonant as well. So basically I'm saying this is a very worthwhile enterprise. That's what I'm trying to say.
Best idea we've ever had.
So Tyrion makes reference to Grumpkins and Snarks. The only other thing creature in the book that I recall is Aurox.
Yeah. Right?
A-U-R-O-C-H-S. What? Any sense of what those are supposed to be like?
I think they're real. Oh, they're an extinct wild ox.
There you go.
So they were once.
Yeah.
They mentioned Oryx like 5 times in a
many times
close succession. Yeah.
But that's just like completely deleted from the show, and nor have we ever seen Grumpkins and Snarks, if I recall, right?
I think that's like saying, okay, there's no real world analog to this.
He does mention giants in this episode, I think, and in the context of not believing that they exist.
Well, so a duck-billed platypus exists, right?
Okay.
Right? That wasn't like a taxidermist put those pieces together. Duck-billed platypus exists, right? So that's like saying, oh, yeah, you're going to go protect us against the duck-billed platypuses and the fairies and the trolls. It's like fairies and trolls don't exist, but duck-billed platypi do. Maybe I shouldn't have gone there.
Wait, so what you're saying is he's mixing in real creatures with fake creatures, right?
Yeah. To lessen the impact of the White Walkers and the Giants, to be like, oh yeah, and the Grumpkins and the Snarks too, right? You know, the Heffalumps and Weasels. So, anyway.
So then back to Winterfell. Luwin and Catelyn have this scene. I actually referred to this scene last week where Catelyn's beside herself and she can't get it together, and Rob kind of says, "Oh, I'm going to handle the affairs of the house," but then a fire distracts him. And before Catelyn can leave, someone tries to kill Bran.
Right.
Right. Then Bran's direwolf kind of rips this guy's throat apart.
Sure does.
So pretty intense scene. So I guess I'm going to fast forward a little bit through the show. Do we ever find out, like, jog my memory, do we ever find out kind of how that blade came to be, in that location? Presumably Cersei and Jaime made it happen. I guess they did it with Tyrion's knife. That's kind of the story I made up for myself.
Yeah.
But I don't think it's ever explicitly established, though, right? Is it?
No, I don't think they ever laid
it
out.
No one ever says it like what I just said.
Right. Littlefinger's like, this belongs to Lord Tyrion. And so Catelyn's like, ah.
Tyrion must have done it. And then Tyrion trial by combat and blah, blah, blah. Right.
Yeah. But I mean, I never trust anything Littlefinger says. I mean, Littlefinger wasn't there. He didn't make it happen. But somehow you think maybe he might have. But he didn't.
What would the motive be, though?
I don't know. Chaos. What is the motive for any of Littlefinger's actions?
Right.
No. Chaos and enmity between the Lannisters and the story.
That would be a tall order for that character who we haven't even met at this point in the series.
Isn't it crazy that we haven't met Littlefinger or Varys?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So.
Go ahead.
No, what were you going to say?
Oh, well, in the chapters that we read in the book, Sansa meets Barriss and Selmy and Renly on the King's Road, which doesn't happen in the show. We don't meet them till King's Landing. But I couldn't even, like, you know, two knights show up. And one, I was like, okay, well, that's Barrison, obviously. But I couldn't remember who the, you know, they're like, and this handsome man. I was like, who the fuck is that?
Nice.
And then she's like, oh, you're Renly. I was like, oh, Renly, right.
Right.
You're so dead.
So sad. Many people have died through the years.
Yeah. Right.
It's crazy. It's crazy. So anyway, they barely save Bran from dying. And here's something I like about the show, about the book, that is less prominent in the show, is that is a brutal scene when Kat defends Bran from the assassin. Like, she grabs that knife with her bare hands,
and it goes to like the bone.
Yeah, it goes to the bone. And in the book, you get the sense, oh, her fingers will never bend the same way again.
Yeah,
do you know? And because really, that's what would happen in real life, if that actually, if you actually grab the knife that hard.
Yeah.
In a show, you can't really, it doesn't really make sense to do things that way unless that's going to be a major plot point, right?
Right.
So they left that part out. I mean, she put her hands in bandages and then everything got better, right?
Yeah.
But in general, why would you want to do that? Like, her in the show, her hands are going to heal super quick. And by the end of the season, I don't even know if she has bandages anymore. It just speaks to the difference between what you can do in a book and what you can do on a television show when you need to worry about continuity and, oh, are the bandages the same from scene to scene and that kind of thing.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, I think the verb that George R. R. Martin uses is bite, like the steel bit into her finger. Something about that just always stuck with me. I don't think we're going to continue this book reading experiment through the rest of the books, but someday you should do yourself a favor and read the Red Wedding sequence in the book, because damn. All right.
Well, speaking of things that can feel like they're cutting into your hands.
Yeah.
Getting a domain name can be difficult sometimes.
You know? Sure can. It can bite you to the bone.
Seriously, because a lot of domain name registrars are horrible. They try to upsell you on a bunch of stuff, and they try to add in all these things and make checking out a really painful procedure, and it can be difficult to find the type of domain that you want.
Yeah.
Fortunately, hover.com/kingsroad is here to rescue you from that problem. Go to hover.com/kingsroad and you can get 10% off your first purchase just by going to hover.com/kingsroad. Hover.com takes all the hassle and confusion out of buying and managing your domain. In less than 5 minutes, you can buy the domain name you want and get it up and running. The website's super clean and simple. And there's an awesome interface. You don't need to mess around with any complications as you're going through this process. A lot of companies make it super unpleasant experience. But hover.com not only doesn't make you pay for extra things to upgrade that should just be included, like privacy, for instance, but they make it easy to transfer domains from other registrars as well. So would highly recommend you go to hover.com/kingsroad. One of my favorite features from hover.com.
What's that?
Is the vast array of kind of domains that they have, like the domain extensions that they have.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
You know, so it used to be you could do like .com and mm-hmm. .net and .org, and that's all you could do, right?
Right.
But now there is so much stuff out there. It's crazy. So, for instance, you can do .ceo. .engineer, .engineering, or .business. One of the popular ones is actually .movie. That actually might be kind of a popular one now, because a lot of movies, right, they, like, when a movie comes out, like there's a new movie coming out called, what, The Walk? That Robert Zemeckis movie, right?
Sure.
And, you know,
The Walk.com
is probably already taken, right?
Right.
But walk.movie or thewalk.movie, not taken. And so oftentimes you see people, like movie companies, go like thewalkmovie.com, right? And it's very not elegant. But now there's so many extensions. There's a .tennis extension, .cooking, .lgbt, .singles. Hover.com has them all. And really, I've checked around at other domain registrars. Very few of them. I don't think any of them have the breadth of domain extensions that hover.com has. So if you want like a really creative – go ahead.
Do they have .rules?
.rules. Let's see if they have .rules. No .rules. Why do you want .rules?
Oh, like Ollie.rules.
I should have seen that one coming.
What about dot lives? Jon Snow dot lives?
Not quite yet. Generally, it's a noun. Not a verb that comes after it. There is a dot gripe. There is a dot adult.
Ollie dot gripe sounds good to me, man.
Yeah, there you go. This is dot porn. That's a good one. Dot rip as well. Anyway, you can explore all these domain extensions and more at hover.com/kingsroad. I anticipate we'll be going through more of them later this season.
Excellent.
But thanks to Hover.
Dot pizza. Sorry.
That is a real one. Yeah, you can be a dot pizza. Uh-huh. So Ollie dot pizza. I don't even know what that means. Hover.com/KingsRoad, 10% off your first purchase. Big thanks to Hover. They are one of our biggest supporters and who are enabling us to do this rewatch as well as the regular show. So anyway, let's get back to this episode of Game of Thrones. So then there's a scene with Dany and the Dothraki where they kind of have this conversation about how do you have sex, you know, and that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
I like the whole it is known.
Yeah.
I don't think that's in the books, is it? Is it in the books?
Not where we've read so far.
Right.
No.
But
people still use it. People use it on me all the time. It is known.
How do they, in what context, Joanna?
I don't know. If I tweet something and, you know, they want to agree with me, they'll just say it is known.
It is a cool line. You know?
Yeah.
It's a cool line. It just sounds cool. But also I like the world building, that there's this idea that these people – when we all agree that something is common knowledge, everyone just says it is known out loud. Yeah. That is the rule here.
Yeah.
So, like the world building there. And, you know, this stuff about, you know, you must, like, how she can please her man. And,
yeah.
I mean, what did you think of this whole concept of her wanting to be on top and him letting her and that kind of stuff?
Well, I like it because there's – in the book they talk about eye contact, you know, in the movie – in the show too. Like if you look into her eyes, that's how where the love comes in. And I like this idea that Daenerys – I think it's clear in the book section than it is here, but it's as much about, I think, power than it is about, I don't know, romance or anything like that. Like she knows to make herself – indispensable to him is the smartest thing that she can do, right? Mm-hmm. So, so it's kind of a power move, but then also, you know, I believe in their love story as well. So,
I mean, we've talked about rape on the show before. Don't want to get into whole rape conversation, but this is
why not? It's so fun.
This is a situation where, you know, this woman falls in love with a rapist, basically, right?
In the show context.
In the show context, right? Mm-hmm. And so how do you feel about that? Does that bother you? Because I've heard it said that that's only a plot line that a man could come up with, you know, that a woman falls in love with a rapist.
I don't think only men have – well,
that
I mean –
a woman falls in love with a rapist, I should say.
It's a really – it's a very common romance novel trope that the first encounter of a romance novel is like against the woman's will and then she falls in love with a guy.
Interesting.
Like he couldn't help himself. She was so beautiful or whatever. I haven't read a romance novel in a long time, but when I was an impressionable teenager, that was a common thread in romance novels. And
so this feels like it's kind of in that vein.
Yeah. But I mean, it is, you know, when Sonia Soraya wrote her Rape of Thrones post on Salon, she drew a thread from the Khal Drogo Dany stuff all the way through the Cersei Jaime stuff of season 4, which is what she was writing about. And I think it's true that they made it rapier in the show. And I don't know that makes it more interesting or better to make it rapier. Mm-hmm. You know, why add rape?
I will say this. I guess this is the one element or the one really only episode that I didn't quote unquote fully buy into. With the Dany Khal Drogo relationship. I think Dany is a straight up badass. I think Emilia Clarke does a fantastic job. I don't have any problems believing anything she does through the entire series. But I guess this idea that just the way it's played, that scene, you know, that happens later in the episode where she's saying, no, tonight I will look upon your face and blah, blah, blah. I don't know. I just didn't buy that it would play out that way. And I think part of it is just because of Emilia Clarke's physicality. You know, I guess I feel like someone who could successfully pull that off needs to be at least slightly more physically imposing. But that's just my take on it.
I don't know about that, but I will say that the scene where I think it's Dorea is the name of the girl who teaches her, like that was just like softcore. I mean, they have their clothes on, but
straight from the books, right?
No, they don't. I mean, they don't like act it out in the books, right?
I know.
And they don't even talk about it. It's like ellipses in the books, basically.
Right.
But you know, HBO's like, all right, let's have a scene where two women are rolling around on top of each other. It'll be great. So
I did like that scene actually because not for the obvious reasons, but because it's just funny how what do you call it? Uptight, you know, Danny's just very clearly awkward and uncomfortable.
Yeah.
And versus like the very free, her very free spirited assistant. And I did like that contrast. I thought it was played well. So anyway, enough about Dothraki sex.
Let's talk about a huge frigid expanse of ice.
Yep. So
a little too steamy.
So we see the wall again for the first time since the first episode, and they get to it. It is a beautiful creation. The mind boggles at how it was created. Whenever I see it, I think to myself, how did humans actually make that thing? But then I think, you know, actual humans have created things like the pyramids and the Great Wall of China and stuff. So maybe it's not completely out of the realm of possibility. I don't know.
I mean, Donald Trump's going to build a wall any day now. So.
I heard about that.
Yeah.
So let's just talk about what happens at that's the last scene of the wall, right?
Yeah. They come upon the wall and they're like, oh,
that's it. And we don't see anything else. Yeah. Okay. Mm-hmm. So what else? So then Kat is like, hey, I need to go to King's Landing to warn Ned about what's going on. Right.
Well, yeah, first she, like, plays, I don't know.
Detective Kat.
But Jessica Fletcher was the name I was looking for. Yeah, she murders, she wrote her ass up to the Broken Tower and finds one of Cersei's long hairs up there and decides that Bran was pushed out of the window. And, and tells Rob and Lewin and Cassel and Theon sort of what she suspects and that she needs to go to King's Landing. I love that Theon is, I mean, it's just so weird to see Theon as a confidant,
right?
You know, in that scenario, given how bad things get eventually.
Right. I think one disappointment I might say I have with the show is that never really gets resolved in a satisfying way, right? The whole idea that Bran saw Cersei and Jaime having sex.
Hasn't yet.
Yeah, perhaps. Maybe they're really seeding it for 5 seasons, 6 seasons later. Season 7 is when that plot point's going to come back with a vengeance.
Like someone's going to hit Bran on the head with a frying pan, and then he's going to be like, "I remember."
Yeah, do you know what I mean? It seemed as though at this point that the show was setting it up so that, oh my gosh, Bran knows this incredibly consequential information. It's going to cause a lot of issues when he reveals it to the world, but then they have him wake up and then the information goes nowhere. And even if he knew, even if he remembered, would it really have made a big difference in terms of what happened?
But isn't that all the more poignant that they threw a kid out of a tower when like he didn't even know what he saw in the first place?
Right.
Now, like, forget that, you know, he couldn't remember what he saw. You know, you and I read the chapter. He thought they were, like, wrestling. He didn't really understand. And I guess he could have gone back to his parents and been like, so the queen and her brother, her bro, were naked wrestling in the tower. That's weird, right? But I think it is kind of poignant that he was pushed out of a window basically for nothing. That nothing came from it.
Yeah.
All yet. Right. Yet. That's no insider information. I'm just saying.
No, I know. I guess I just don't find that explanation to be particularly satisfying.
Okay. You know?
So then Kat says, hey, I got to go off to Winterfell. I did think it was interesting how quickly Kat seems to recover from, you know, in the book, she's wailing and gnashing her teeth for what appears to be weeks on end. And then all of a sudden she's like, hey, I've done what I can for Bran. I got to get going now. You know, I did think that was a bit of a quick transformation.
I know. And Rob's like, oh, you're really going to leave Bran here? She's like, yeah, I got to go see my husband, yo.
She's like, I've done everything I can. When it was like the opposite of that, you know, two scenes ago.
Right? Yeah. I like that earlier scene too when Rob is like, what about your son Rickon? He's really tiny and he has no idea what's going on.
Rickon needs you.
Yeah.
Rickon needs you. And of course she ignored that too.
Yeah. So. She's like, who? No one, absolutely no one cares about Rickon, least of all Kat. So yeah.
And then we have kind of the main action of, this, you know, episode. Everything kind of builds up to this sequence, right? Where, Sansa meets the Hound and Ilyn Payne. Ilyn Payne is he the guy that executed Ned?
Yeah.
Gotcha. And the scene is very similar to what it is in the book, right?
Yeah.
I believe. Pretty close.
Well, yeah. Like I said, she also meets Barristan and Renly in that scene as well. But right. Yeah, she gets freaked out. Her direwolf gets freaked out. But actually, what's missing? I was just reading this chapter and I was really appreciating it. What's missing is Sansa's good qualities at this point in her life, which I don't think the show does a very good job. You know, the show is like, okay, she's young, like forgive her for being so silly, so wrong often. And we can, but you know, when Sansa gets in this weird, awkward position where her direwolf is growling and there's swords drawn on her, you know, and she uses diplomacy, she's like, oh, you know, you're Barristan the Bold. I've heard the stories all about you. Oh, you're Renly Baratheon. You're so brave, blah, blah, blah. And then she, like, apologizes to Sir Ilyn. You know, she's courtly because she has been trained in that way. And Sansa has that skill. And I think in the show, you just see Arya is the cool sister and Sansa is the sucky sister. And you don't see any upshot to her. Right?
Yep.
Yeah. And George R. R. Martin has said that he really regretted that they had to cut the scene between Arya and Sansa that's in the book. Like, they asked, once upon a time, the New York Times asked him what scene he was sad that they cut. And he said this early scene between Sansa and Arya, where Sansa's talking about, hey, we need to go ride in the cart with the queen. And Arya's like, no, that's boring. I don't want to do that. Mostly because you don't get a lot of Arya-Sansa interaction. Mm. You get them fighting. But what's fun is if you want to go online and Google it, both Maisie Williams and Sophie Turner auditioned with that scene that was uncut. So you can see them reading it like as children. You can see them reading the scene that got cut. Anyway, that's
And are you saying you really like that scene?
Not that. No, not. I don't really know that would have added. I just thought it was an interesting bit of trivia that
gotcha.
George Martin was like, that's the scene I regret them cutting. Talking about lemon cakes and riding in the cart with Queen. So.
This is kind of the first interaction between Sansa and the Hound, which would prove to be a very consequential relationship.
Yes.
So like that, as kind of the intro, and it's a pretty suitable intro. You really get a sense of who he is from that scene. And then Joffrey comes in and they decide to go on a little adventure, where he's just checking all the boxes. He's, feeding her a bunch of wine, apparently.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Saying you can my lady can drink however much she wants, and
every time Jack Gleeson says my lady,
yeah,
a little bit of bile rises up in my throat.
Mm-hmm.
He's so good. Don't you miss Joffrey? Don't you miss Jack Gleeson?
Yeah, he. I mean, it was nice having a really villainous character on the show.
I mean,
or like a main villain of the show.
Yeah, I mean, there's still like Ramsay, I guess. Ramsay's just not as fun to hate as Joffrey was. I don't
why
know.
Why is that?
I don't know.
So they go out and they find Arya sparring with Butcher's Boy, and it's pretty similar to how it plays out in the book, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's not 100%, but it's pretty close. And the basics are correct in the sense that, you know, this direwolf bites Joffrey's, you know, and Joffrey's completely humiliated. And
Arya throws his sword in the river.
Right.
I like how in the book, yeah, it's from Sansa's point of view, and Sansa's like, and he called her bad names, like really bad names. And in the show, he drops a C-bomb on her, and you're like, yep, that's the bad word that Sansa was too much of a lady to say in the book.
Yeah, so. Indeed.
Yeah.
So I think one of the so overall, I would say this episode is pretty tame from a violence perspective. But what I love about this episode is how well it sets up the kind of injustice of the entire series. That, firstly, the Lannisters are really cruel and heartless people. And also just that you can get someone killed just because you're careless by asking them to duel with you with swords, for instance, which is what Arya did. Like, Arya's actions indirectly led to the Butcher's Boy getting killed, and in the book it's far more graphic, I think, the way he is killed. Like, he's like split in half or something like that, if I recall. Whereas they just write him down in the show. But I mean, this they have this scene at this council where, you know, Robert's demanding answers. It plays out very similarly to how it does in the books, where Sansa refuses to come to Arya's aid. Mm-hmm. Right, because she doesn't want to humiliate the prince in front of everyone, and as a result, they have to kill. They have to kill
the lady,
the good one, the one that didn't do anything wrong.
Yeah, but Sansa's the one who, like, Sansa's the one who lied.
What is the meaning of this? Why was my daughter not brought to me at once?
How dare you speak to your king in that manner?
Quiet, woman. Sorry, Ned. I never meant to frighten the girl. But we need to get this business done quickly.
Your girl and that butcher's boy attacked my son. That animal of hers nearly tore his arm off.
That's not true! She just bit him a little. He was hurting Micah.
Joff told us what happened. You and that boy beat him with clubs while you set your wolf on him.
That's not what happened!
Yes, it is. They all attacked me and she threw my sword in the river.
Liar!
Shut up!
Enough! He tells me one thing, she tells me another. Seven hells, what am I to make of this?
Yeah, what I like about that is, you know, you get the Lannister machinations, you get Robert, King Robert's complete ineffectualness, you know, like he's just completely ineffectual in this scene. The lack of justice, and also just the idea of you're not in Winterfell anymore, right? Like, Ned is used to being the law of his land.
Right.
And now he's subject to Cersei's completely irrational demands. And he's still trying to impose a bit of his home where he is, when he's like, I'll be the one to do it. The direwolf is from the north. This is how we do it. You know, and Cersei's like, is this a trick? And he's like, no, it's just our way. This is what we do.
Right, because in the book, it's a little more clear that, you know, she suspects he might free the direwolf or do something that.
Yeah.
And then in the book also, he says he ships the direwolf back to the north to be buried.
Yeah.
So that Cersei can't do anything with the direwolf's dead body or anything like that.
Like, yeah, so she can't make a coat, like a Cruella de Vil-esque coat out of direwolf pelt. Yeah.
I did think it was interesting that in the book we get a little more insight into why it's such a horrifying thing that Ned had to kill the direwolf. Because he grasps how, you know, the direwolf saved Bran's life. It kind of saved Arya in this episode, and it would go on to save many Stark's lives throughout many episodes.
Yeah.
And so in the book, there's kind of this moment where he understands that what he's doing is truly horrible. Whereas in the show, it's just him reluctantly, you know, killing the direwolf.
Yeah, I guess that's a good point, that he's stripping Sansa of some of her defenses.
Right.
You know, and you do feel that. I mean, in this book, both the girls lose their direwolf because, you know, Arya throws rocks at Nymeria until Nymeria leaves. And so we still haven't seen Nymeria come back on the show. And, you know, Lady's gone for good. And so those girls, unlike the boys, those girls don't have that protection as they continue on to King's Landing. So,
right. Yeah. And there's a callback in the book, I think, to when Jon says, hey, the Starks were meant to have these direwolves.
Yeah.
Right? There's this sense of destiny in there that you don't really get on the show. So And then Bran wakes up, and that's the end of the episode.
I did like that. I mean, it's a little different than it is in the book, but I really like it. Like, you know, they kill Lady, and it seems to almost be like a psychic connection because, you know, Bran, as you know, because you've now read like a Bran dream chapter, but Bran has weird connections to animals and stuff like that. And so Lady's dead, and then Bran opens his eyes.
Yeah, in the book, there's a whole dream sequence before he opens his eyes. And
yeah.
I just hate dream sequences in general. Like, I just don't
get ready to like flip through those Bran chapters pretty quickly.
Yep. Yeah. I'm planning on it. And I guess that's kind of what I was trying to express my disappointment at earlier is when Bran wakes up, it's this holy shit moment in the show and it never pays off. I mean, yes, Bran goes on his adventures and stuff, but when he wakes up, I'm thinking, oh my gosh, he's going to tell everyone about the sex that he saw, and that never really happens. You know what I mean? So a little disappointed by that.
Okay. Well, yeah, I mean, these are two great cliffhangers. The first two episodes, you know, the first episode is like, shit, that kid just fell out a window. And then the second one is like, shit, that kid is awake. He's going to spill the incest beans. You know, so they're good little cliffhangers to keep people watching. We'll have to see what happens. You know, now they usually just end with a Danny scene, which I don't know as always, but that seems to be their go-to. Or at least it was, I don't know, for like season three and four.
Right.
They're always like, we gotta end with Daenerys. That's what the people want, right? Dragons.
So overall, what do you think of this episode, Jenna Robinson?
Really great. As you mentioned, really poignant with all the goodbyes that we see. And like we talked about last week, it's really amazing how quickly they establish those relationships. That it does matter to us after an episode that these people have to say goodbye to each other. And then, yeah, the whole showdown on the King's Road is really, really great. Really good. Really good character building stuff. Really sad. Yeah, and just sad. Poor Lady, poor Sansa, poor Arya, poor Micah, the butcher's boy, poor Ned. You know, and they're just going deeper and deeper down the rabbit hole of these awful people. So, yeah.
Great episode. I agree with everything you said. So stay tuned to hear what you need to be reading for next week's episode. In the meantime, Jenna Robinson, you want to let people know where they can find more of your work on the internet this week?
You can find me most days on VanityFair.com, or you can follow me on Twitter at Joe Wrote This.
I directed a movie, and it is out on video on demand right now. Would love it if you would check it out, watch it, and if you like it, leave a review. You can find it at theprimaryinstinct.com. Would love to hear what you guys think of it. It's available on all major video on demand platforms. So, Jonah Robinson, any sense of where people need to read to for next episode?
Yeah, the reading for this week is really easy. It's just one more chapter past where you've read. Because you will have noticed for this week's reading assignment that there was a lot of stuff that's in episode 3.
Right.
So there's just one more chapter after the Daenerys chapter that we just finished, which is a Bran chapter. And that in the paperback, that is page 249. And as Dave said, it's pretty close in the Kindle version as well. But that's Bran's third chapter.
All right. So read through Bran chapter 3.
Chapter 4.
Read through Bran chapter 4. For season 1 episode 3 of Cast of Kings and Game of Thrones.
Lord Snow
is the name of that episode. So looking forward to that. Thanks for tuning in. Thanks to Hover for sponsoring us this week, and we'll see you guys next week.